And welcome to everybody here on YouTube as we venture into another exciting edition of Off the Hook Overtime. Spirited discussion we just had over on Off the Hook Radio Edition. And I think we should continue. First, did everybody make it? Everybody make it okay into the internet version of this?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, we are here. Good. And just for the record, we are live on YouTube.
Actually made it to YouTube as well. Okay, well, you know, I just want to continue with this Apple story because it really is. I wish we had more than an hour on the radio to talk about this because, you know, we have so much of interest to say. I want to quote this cryptography professor at Johns Hopkins University, Matthew Green, who says Apple's new features set a dangerous precedent by creating surveillance technology that law enforcement or governments could exploit. They've been selling privacy to the world and making people trust their devices, he said. But now they're basically capitulating to the worst possible demands of every government. I don't see how they're going to say no from here on out. He says he's worried that such a system could be abused because it showed law enforcement and governments that Apple now had a way to flag certain content on a phone while maintaining its encryption. Apple has previously argued to the authorities that encryption prevents it from retrieving certain data. What happens when other governments ask Apple to use this for other purposes? Mr. Green asked. What's Apple going to say? Well, Apple dismisses those concerns, saying those safeguards are in place to prevent abuse of the system and that Apple would reject any such demands from a government. Yeah, they'll just say no, and that's it. That's how we're safe, because Apple won't agree to do it. We will inform them that we did not build the thing they're thinking of. But yeah, you did. It's exactly the thing they're thinking of, because it allows you to search by a hashtag, or by hash rather, for particular images and flag people who have these particular images and then do God knows what. So yeah, it's something to be concerned about. Go ahead, Alex.
Well, you know, was it Professor Green? Is that who it was? A cryptography professor? I mean, this is, I think it's important to know. He's a professor of cryptography. He's not a professor of law. He's talking about precedents here. And there is no precedent. I mean, this is the problem with this. This is not a precedent. This has been going on for many, many years. Google has done this. Facebook has done this. This happens on every single major platform in the world because they do not want to be trafficking or warehousing child sexual abuse imagery, child pornography. So I don't buy this at all, that it's going to set a dangerous precedent. And then to go back to Rob's point too, which I think is generally a valid point here, without any kind of empirical data though. So generally, as a principle, I think what Rob was talking about at the end of the radio show Off the Hook was that there could be this issue of function creep, that something designed for one purpose turns into something else. And I think that's what Professor Green is also speaking to, as well as this notion that it's going to get worse and worse and worse, and it's going to be abused and misused. But the simple fact of the matter is, it hasn't. This system of matching hashes to find child sexual abuse imagery has been around for a very long time.
Okay, if it's been around for a very long time, then why is this a story?
I have no idea. That's what I've been mystified by through the entirety of this, because I thought that maybe Apple was doing something more nefarious than matching hashes. I thought this has got to be about something.
I think they must be, for this to be such a big story. And I think what Rob mentioned about it doing most of the work on your individual phone, I think that is very significant.
But that's got to be the case for every other service that's doing this type of back-end service as well, that's doing this back-end hash mashing as well, because if it's going to be sent in encrypted fashion, it's going to be stored encrypted after it's uploaded, then the hash is not going to match. But again, you know, on the same token, I guess cryptography professors probably shouldn't talk about legal precedents, and maybe lawyers shouldn't talk about cryptography. I don't know.
Yeah, I just disagree that the device is a service. So that comparison to me is kind of moot, you know?
Well, the device, okay, I see what you're saying. That's a good point, though. But I also think it's de minimis. Now, it's the same thing I was saying during the show, too, is that using the device to hash these images, I mean, like one of the DNS intelligence systems that I coded, I do hash matching on massive files every single day, you know, files that are you know, several gigs large, compressed. And, you know, with an ordinary machine, that'll take just a couple of seconds. So, you know, creating a hash of a single file, and I imagine that most people aren't going to be uploading millions and millions of files, I think just really isn't a lot of processing power to be concerned about, given how much other crap is happening on our phones with and draining our batteries or using our processing power without
I don't think it's the processing power that's got people upset. I think it's the notion that Apple is snooping around inside your phone. Not on their system, not on their cloud, on your phone, the phone that you bought. They do not own it. You own it. And they're searching your phone. That is what people are upset about.
But think about it this way, too, then, right? I mean, if we are so concerned about somebody running a cryptographic function and creating a hash of image files and then matching this long string of numbers and with another long string of numbers and letters, shouldn't we, you know, by necessary implication then, be really, really angry about any kind of collection of our personal data, our geolocation device, you know, all of this information that is going to all these platforms? I mean, this is so minor and so de minimis, and it has nothing to do with me as a person, my cryptographic hashes, that is. You know, they may be unique to me and my files, but they don't say anything about me, unlike all the other data that is collected by these platforms that says everything about who I am, where I am, who with whom I spend time, what I read, what websites I go to. I just think that, you know, we're fighting the wrong battle here.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of an other crap exists type of argument in which, like, yeah, there's a lot more information that people can get about us. By and large, it's still things that people are, you know, clicking through terms of service agreements in order to allow about themselves on some level. But, like, I'm talking with you right now over a connection and looking at you on my Linux computer, open source based. I can control every single piece of software that runs on this thing and decide what I want, what I don't want. And as long as it works for what I need to do, you know, that's perfectly fine. But I feel like that's a choice that's being taken from people the instant that there's something running on your phone doing work that you cannot control and that you have not consented to.
But there is a choice, too, though, in that this type of hashing and hash matching on the back end would only happen if you choose to back up your photos to iCloud.
Now, is that a choice or is that something that you have to opt out of?
I don't know, but I think it's a distinction without a difference for the purposes of the argument here, which is that it can be turned on or off. I think, you know, for most people, it probably is on, but then they quickly would run out of storage because you don't have a lot of, I just think, default storage with iCloud sufficient to hold all of a normal person's photos, especially if you've got kids. And so it might be turned on, but the fact that you can turn it on and off means that there's some form of consent. You should know what you're doing.
Yes, Rob.
This is also just Apple as a company saying to the government, yeah, this is something that we'll allow for you. This is something that's okay. This is a peek that you know, we will enable you to have in whether or not people have photos that match these hashes. That will be, you know, the government after that is going to turn to Microsoft going, why aren't you doing this for us? Mm-hmm. Going to turn to Google with you know, the Android phone. Why aren't you doing this for us? And, you know, how long until it becomes some kind of codified law that you have to allow these kind of backdoors? And then even like open source software would be working its way around some kind of rules and flouting the system in some way, like some kind of system flouter. I just feel like it's a very, the slope is indeed slippery.
Yeah,
it's a hacky thing to say slippery slope.
Let's not limit this to just imagery, because audio too. You can have voice recognition and run that particular search on someone's phone and look for a particular person that maybe this person has left a voicemail for someone. Where is this person? Who is he talking to? I mean, Alex, surely you see how technologically, if we accept this, then we're one step away from accepting something else. I mean, we're talking about child pornography right now. We could be talking about drugs tomorrow. We could be talking about murder. We could be talking about all kinds of other crimes. We could be talking about things that are objectionable to some people, but not to other people. Do you not see the danger in this?
Yeah. I mean, we are exactly talking about something that is objectionable to some people and not to others right now. I mean, that's exactly the description of our conversation. But I think that there is a big difference, too, though. And also, I think, you know, Rob makes, you know, a good point. Apple seems to have kowtowed to the government now. They asked them to do it and they did it. But I also think, and look, I'm not an Apple fanboy here. They're not paying me for this. But the fact that they haven't been doing this for so long, I think, you know, says a lot about that company and where they place privacy as well. Because to me, without there being some kind of content analysis, if Apple was, on the other hand, scanning the actual content of my photos using some kind of image analysis to detect the presence of children and the presence of nudity on my phone, that would be very objectionable to me. I wouldn't like it at all. I would be more concerned about false flags, the false identification of these types of materials, given the severe legal consequences that go along with mere possession of child pornography. It's a strict liability crime. I think I don't see there being a very big privacy issue for me with somebody hashing these files.
Alex, you're suddenly muted. I don't know how that happened.
Oh, sorry. I don't know how that happened either. But I don't see because content is not being analyzed here.
Okay,
well, it's just.
All right, we're talking about child pornography. I wish we weren't. Let's talk about something. Let's go to a different country, perhaps a country that is even more puritanical than ours, a country where any pornography is a crime. How hard would it be to look for any pornography and label those people as having pictures of consenting adults on their phone and sharing that with a regime that objects to that kind of thing? Or gay people, or the imagination just will give you so many possibilities here.
Any pictures of rainbows.
Yeah, there you go, rainbows.
You have rainbows on your phone, you are effed.
Well, look, but the problem there is the technical means to accomplish what you suggest might be feasible just isn't feasible. Because you'd have to go and find every picture of pornography and make a hash of it. Or every picture of a rainbow.
So what this is just child pornography's greatest hits? I mean, how you're saying they can only find certain images that are well known. Then it doesn't even seem very effective.
No, it is in a sense because, and look, it was very effective in the case that I told you about in Florida that wound up being, frankly, a false detection that ended very, very horribly. But it is very effective because these images that the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children has acquired are images that came from other data troves, other child pornographers, you know, big busts of child pornography, and the things that have been trafficked in the past. And this is about preventing the further trafficking of those particular images. And so it is unfortunately, it's a pretty massive database, but it's effective because, thankfully, there isn't a hell of a lot more of it being produced on a daily basis. So, if God forbid, child pornography was being produced at the level of adult pornography, this would be a completely useless database. But thankfully, it is not, and so I think it is pretty effective.
Rob, I'll get to you in a second. I just want to give out the phone number, 802-321-4225, 802-321-4225. Sorry for the people who went to a fax machine. We weren't quite set up yet. Go ahead, Rob.
And yeah, I'm definitely interested in hearing from our listeners on what they think of this. The trouble with legislating based on what's technically possible now is that we'll never keep up. In another generation or two, our phones are going to be more powerful. And, it's easy for a phone now to, you know, just do generate cryptographic hashes in the background and send them home to Apple. Maybe in a generation or two, phones will be able to do more detailed examinations of the actual content of files. Maybe algorithms running in the background on your phone will be checking for, you know, just any sort of picture that looks like it could be a child sexual abuse image, and, you know, leave the database of known bad images out of it. This whole thing will be opened up if we're not vigilant now on what we let our devices do and not do. I'm much more worried about the possibilities of this opening bad stuff up down the road. than I am right now about what people's iPhones this generation are going to be doing. It's the principle of the thing, really.
Okay, we have a phone call. Hello, are you there?
Hi, yeah, it's G.I. Jack. Nice to, what's it called? Thank you for having me on the air. A few points I'd like to make.
Can I just ask you a question? Did you do something strange to your phone number?
Oh, yes. Using a VoIP service.
You're calling us from Hotel Pennsylvania. We saw that show up on the screen. Wow. So tell us what's going on in our favorite hotel in Manhattan there. It's all shuttered up last time we looked.
If you use a VoIP service, you can do anything the phone company does, and it's absolutely amazing. VoIP.ms. Okay. But anyway.
What's on your mind?
So there's a few points I need to make. The gentleman is correct that Google Cloud already does hash matching, and it's already had some chilling effects. One of them is that Android malware research has been disappeared off of Google Drive accounts because Android just didn't want anything bad about Android being published. So some Android malware researchers were researching exploits on Android, and Google just deleted it off their Google Cloud, and there goes their talk.
Interesting.
There's that. So people said there's a small amount of child pornography matches hatches, but if you have something like a mem and people share a mem and keep on sharing the same image, and let's say that's just a mem critical of a government, if any government, it could be this government, could be Saudi Arabia, Iran, North Korea, whatever, they can search for those mems. And if people share a lot of mems, if they catch just one of them hashing, that's enough for them to go track down dissent. And I think that's very much a very, very realistic threat. I mean, we saw kind of how in the early 2000s that these fusion centers were supposed to be collaborating between all these intelligence agencies were supposed to be just for counterterrorism. And terrorism kind of wound up to be doing narcotics enforcement and kind of just about everything. They just get used for everything. And I don't think it's going to stop with child pornography. I think I linked in the chat from the Cypherpunks mailing list, Four Horsemen of the Infopocalypse. How will the internet be censored? Terrorists, drug dealers, pedophiles, and organized crime.
And don't forget hackers. Hackers are in there too.
And that's just, hackers are in there too. But it's just one of those things where you have this threat which gets people on an emotional level. How often have we heard our entire lives, think of the children, about everything from rock music, homosexuality, just anything that they don't like. Think of the children. This is going to be corrupting the children. How often, has that just been so out of left field, just to the point where you hear think of the children, they don't care about the children. This is just a power grab.
And then they just drop billions of high-resolution cameras and storage devices on the entire world and then shove them in front of every kid's face, and then say, oh gosh, we've got a terrible problem with all these images that are being created, and it's abuse.
Oh, of course. Of course. It's probably going to have, what they have, a profile of what they think a pedophile is going to be. It's not going to be anything various Congress critters get caught with this kind of stuff, or it's just going to be, the type of people who are either minorities or are on the edges of society.
Caller, I think you've done a great job summarizing the threats. I'd like to give Alex a chance to weigh in here.
All right, cool. Thank you for having me.
Okay.
Look, absolutely. And I completely agree with the caller that Rob made the same point, that if in the future it is being used to track content, right, or it's morphed into something where they're using it to actually look at the images of our phones and make some kind of cataloging of whatever it is that we're doing or taking pictures of. But that is not the case today.
Don't you see how by accepting this now, it makes it easier in the future?
It doesn't make it easier. I don't think it does. And I don't think that this is the kind of thing where we have to worry too much about function creep, because it's been going on, like I said, over and over and over again. This has been happening for a very long time. It isn't content-based. If we started doing something to match content or look for particular words and phrases, let's say the government had the FISA court idiotically authorized a warrant so that they could surveil the Alexa microphones of the Black Lives Matter protesters, right, and listen for keywords, and on certain keywords like protest or insurrection or something like that, then you know their ability to listen in would have. That's not what we're talking about at all here. It absolutely is not. We're not talking about dragnet surveillance. We're not talking.
I don't think that's what you're talking about, but I think it's what we're concerned about.
No, the closest that I've heard to it is the caller's example, which was really good, and I think it bordered on content. It was one of these hybrid cases. It would actually, I think, would make for an interesting law school privacy exam, where if you have this particular system, and what you're doing is using it to match hashes to find individual images. He's right. What if those images were politically motivated? What if it was some kind of meme or mem, however you want to say it, right? That had to do
I never heard anybody say mem before, and it's meant meme, but I guess it's a different way of pronouncing it.
But, you know, phonetically, mm-hmm. I don't know. It makes sense, frankly.
Sure, why not?
Tomato, torpedo.
Yeah.
Well, finish your point out, so we have another call.
Yeah. If you were trying to track the image itself and the image had some kind of political connotation or content to it, that would be misusing this particular system. I could see that's an interesting case, but again, the technical countermeasures to prevent it would be simply cropping the image, changing the color, flipping a bit, whatever. It'd be very, very difficult, I think, to make a fail-proof system like that.
Okay, good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hello, this is Philip from Missouri. How you guys doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, hanging in there. Well, with our privacy being a commodity anymore, I think that the phone companies or whatever will just do whatever they can to make as much profit with as little trouble from the government as they can get by with. As far as having an algorithm just like searching out your phone for specific things, the problem with false positives is a real thing. Well, it happens with spam all the time, right? I don't know, but the thing is, you want to be able to, you know, get the bad actors, the terrorists, the child pornographers, stuff like that, right? But to do so with just, like, constantly just, well, with a wiretap warrant, right? They could put an unlimited time on something like that, right? To be able to just listen into your conversation, see if you like slip up.
I imagine that's
or
how it
they
works.
Capture... Yeah. But, I don't know. I mean, you do sign a terms of service with the phone company. And the way the system is set up, the phone, you really don't own it.
Well, you do own your phone. And the phone company isn't listening for you to say certain key words. And then reporting it to law enforcement if you say them.
Well, yeah. But it's, I don't know, it's just really complicated. I think just blanket surveillance is a bad thing to begin with. It's too easily corruptible and whatnot.
Yeah, and if you're looking for something and you just are searching everybody, it's quite possible you'll find something else. And if it's not technologically possible right now, it guaranteed it will be in the future. And the consequences are unintended or unpredicted, but they're consequences all the same.
Imagine the Human Review Board is taken out of the loop because someone somewhere decides, you know what? This has been refined enough, and we can actually have this do it in a distributed way and tackle all these different things at once and then organize them, prioritize them, but we actually don't need human intervention anymore. Then what are we doing, and how are we going to address that and our privacy therein? And especially when we're asking, you know, I'd like to see that algorithm, or I'd like to know a little bit more about this technology that we're supposed to trust in this way. And you're told, no, I'm sorry, that's proprietary, and it's something that, well, it would affect our bottom line, and I'm not sure that the shareholders would be okay with it. And, well, we've already bought your privacy, and so we're just going to do what we want to do.
And we'll add you to the list because you asked about how to...
Yeah, actually, that's another another criteria we will be looking into and organizing as well. And yes, and then there aren't any humans that we're going to be employing for that either.
See how suspicious we are?
And do you want to appeal it? Well, we've eliminated the appeal process and automated that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like this, right? I'm a criminal justice student, right? And I'm doing the cybercrime part of it. Where I have to do like a report or something like that on child pornography, and I type it into Google, some algorithm that isn't watched over could like flag that and just put me on a watch list for no reason at all.
Of course.
Hey, I have to have a report done. I have to look at the FBI's definition of child pornography and, you know, the laws on it and whatnot.
It makes it further taboo. Absolutely. Yeah. And your education or edification about a particular issue that itself is not often written about or spoken about or covered in the media becomes a point of interest about you when, in fact, it's an assignment or so forth.
Alex, I believe you had a point to contribute.
Yeah, I have one or two points, but I had a very quick question for the listener. He can answer yes or no if he prefers. Is that a beagle in the background barking or baying?
Yeah,
I think it's a beagle too. Wow.
I knew it was a beagle. I have a beagle as well, and I was wondering. I thought, how the hell did she start barking? And I'm only hearing it in my ear. So in any event, yeah. All right, I'm not going crazy, but.
Decided yet, Alex, so let's not jump the gun.
That's true. Yeah. Look, I'm happy to play devil's advocate, but I don't think I'm representing the devil here. I'm representing the poor kids, right? So, yeah, there we have it.
That's what the devil's advocate would say.
Here's the point that I want to make. I don't think this is the right argument for us to be having, in a sense. Look, they're not looking at content. There's a very lofty and important government interest here, the protection of minors and trying to prevent the sexual exploitation of children, the trafficking of these images. I know it's unfashionable to appeal to the actual thing that you're trying to do, but it is, a laudable and a worthwhile goal. And I would have a very serious problem with accomplishing even that goal if we were talking about content whatsoever, and not just strings of numbers and characters. I think that if we are, as privacy advocates and enthusiasts, of which I count myself one, if we are going to argue vociferously against a particular policy or issue, it shouldn't be this one. It's not the right argument, because if we argue against everything, even something that's been happening under our noses unknowingly for many years, we're going to lose credibility. I just don't see this.
I cannot agree with that, because, look, if this has been happening already, then why the big announcement now? Why announce something that's old? Why announce something that isn't something that is a step forward? It's the step forward that people are worried about, you know, because it's an ominous step forward.
But let's answer the question that you posed, which is why now? And it's because one mainstream media outlet, you know, I don't know who it was, published a story about Apple doing this, and it sounded like it was a crazy, novel, innovative thing to be checking for child pornography on, you know, whenever you're syncing up photos.
It was Apple who made the announcement last Thursday. They are the ones that did it.
They're the ones that announced that they're going to be doing it, but they probably did that in not the smartest or the most logical way. That press release should have said, Facebook and Google have been doing this for a long time, and now we're going to start doing it too. But that doesn't sound great from a PR perspective, that, hey, we should have been doing this basic check that's non-invasive and has nothing to do with anything but math and non-content to help prevent the sexual exploitation of minors. We should have been doing this for the last 4 years, but now we're going to join up and do it. Right? There's no good way, I think, to break this, but it sounds like news to ordinary reporters. This sounds like news. To me, when I read the story and I saw the headlines, I thought, wow, Apple's got to be doing something different than hash matching. And no, they're not.
Okay, well,
it's because people don't understand the technology and they report on it, and then everybody else feels like they have to report on it.
If it is not news, why did Apple issue a press release saying it was news? You know, right there, that do they not understand the technology they're working with?
Yeah, well, that's they probably don't. I think you've answered your own question.
Well,
there,
then I feel even more
the marketing people
uneasy
are
at
not
this.
Cryptographers,
mm-hmm.
and they're not trust and safety officers in the company. And so, yeah, even to them, it sounded like news. But really, what they're doing is old news. This is the classic example of old wine in a new bottle. And maybe Apple put it out there because they thought that people would receive it positively. And they haven't. I mean, because of this privacy issue, they seem like they're doing something over and above the norm, but it's been the norm. They're just joining the party.
Well, you know, I think there might be a difference here that we're overlooking. You say Google and Facebook have been doing this. Now, how have they been doing it? On Facebook, on the website, on Google searches, or on actual physical devices that consumers own? Have they been doing it?
They do it. No, they don't do it on the devices.
Well, and I think that's the difference then.
No, it's not a difference. It's not a difference whatsoever, right? Because it's just a matter of who's doing the processing. If you were to upload a photo to Facebook, let's say right now, or to Twitter, right? We've left them alone for a long time. You upload a photo to Facebook or Twitter, they're going to take a hash of that particular photo on their system after you've uploaded it, right? And then compare it to the backend database.
Yeah, but you know what else, Alex? If you upload it to Twitter or Facebook, people are going to see it. You know,
perhaps.
That's a big difference.
Unless,
if you have an image on your phone, only you can see that.
You could have a private group, or you could send something in a private message. It's not everything that's done on Facebook.
You're still sending it to somebody, though.
Well, so is this situation, right? This doesn't happen if you don't sync your photos with some kind of cloud service, with iCloud, right? It just doesn't happen. Because the hashing happens on the phone, it's necessary to do that, presumably, because once the file goes into iCloud, it's encrypted, and therefore the hash would be completely different. So it's necessary to do it on the phone if you're going to do any kind of back-end processing. But here's a thought. You know, if you're very concerned with privacy and these things happening on your phone without your consent, and you don't want this to happen, just don't back up your photos to iCloud.
And it
don't
seems
put
like
them
an
anywhere.
Easy so. Solution that any professional child pornographer would know about. So what is the point of this?
Of course, because it happens unknowingly a lot of the time as well. And people don't realize, I think, a lot of times that they are backing up these photos, or they've been doing it with impunity for so long that they will continue doing it, and it may not be a long-term solution, but I think in the short term, this will happen. But here's another thing that we didn't talk about on the radio, though, but I think is, you know, very similar to the vaccine debate that we were having earlier, right?
Well, we weren't debating. I don't think
who here was debating?
Yeah, we agreed on that one.
That's true. The vaccine debate that we had framed earlier, right? Mm-hmm. So these features are not going to be present on any iPhones until they're upgraded to iOS 15. That's my understanding. So iOS 15 is undoubtedly going to come with a whole bunch of new security vulnerabilities that are patched. There's going to be a whole bunch of security patches and fixes and things that go along with this. But because people are going to be terrified of Apple scanning their phones and making cryptographic hashes of their images, even if they're not backing up to iCloud because of all the press attention that this has been giving, I guarantee you there are going to be people that refuse to update their devices.
Yeah, I agree.
Just like refusing to take the vaccine.
Really, just like that. That's the parallel you want to draw here. I'm going to let our caller have the last word, because
save them.
Because Bobson from Bulgaria is war dialing us, and no, he wants to get through. Yeah. So, caller, any last words?
Well, what would I do if, like, say, for instance, I was out with my family at this beach, right?
Uh huh.
And I took a picture of, like, my nephew or my son, like, with his shirt off, right? And because he's got his shirt off, it's flagged as whatever. And I try to sync it to my computer to maybe, you know, print it out or, you know, email it to some other family members. What happens then when my phone gets locked up because of that?
It won't. And Anna, that's a great question, because I think it illustrates what people are afraid of, but that's not what's happening whatsoever, caller. And I think it's a great question. If you take a picture, let's say it's worse than that, right? You take a picture of your kids and they're naked in the bathtub. and there's there's, you know, your son's penis is front and center, and you know it, you know, there is child nudity in this photo, and you go and back up that photo to iCloud, you know what's going to happen? Nothing. Literally zero. And that's because that photo that you took does not exist in the database of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. That photo that you took is not child pornography. It's not reported child pornography. It's not part of a data trove. It wasn't transferred or trafficked. Those are the only images against which your images would be compared.
Yeah, but Alex, let's talk about this other feature that Apple announced, where any children receiving a nude photo, that photo will be flagged, and you know, that technology certainly does exist. So we're a step away from having that be flagged.
This is exactly what I said, though. At the outset of talking about this, I said this is actually more problematic to me than what we're going to be talking about in the second instance, which is hash matching and math and cryptography. What they're doing in terms of looking at kids' photos with some kind of algorithmic detection of nudity, that's much more problematic to me. That's weird. Well, that's kind of, you know, a strange parental guidance.
Don't you think it's significant that these two things were announced at the same time?
No, maybe. Okay. I don't
Big
know.
Big coincidence.
I don't. That's reading a lot into it, but I don't know. I find the first one more objectionable. The first one about looking at the images themselves much more objectionable.
I'm sorry, caller. What did you say, caller?
I think it's just Apple covering their butts. You know, just, you know, putting out a blanket statement, hey, we're doing this.
Yeah.
So that way they have some kind of documentation that they try to warn the public or whatever when things go foul.
All right. Hey, thanks for your call. Say hi to your dog for us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. What do you think about the algorithm that the MyPillow guy is, like, fronting on his live streamer? I'll let you go.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a funny story. I think we talked about that a little bit when we were planning the show this week. But I read through some of the coverage, and he sounds like he's as confused as everyone else, but won't back down.
I didn't really get a chance to go through that.
It's bonkers.
Can anyone sum that up?
Bonkers.
Well, I kind of knew that. Rob, it looks like you know something.
I think Kyle has covered it pretty well. It's bonkers. There was also a guy called Rob Rosenberger has been there kind of monitoring things for the tech reporter side of things, and talking about how, like, he's happily talking about, you know, information security experts are going over packet captures without having given them the packet captures. And, like, his own people don't know what's going on and what's not. It's a mess. It's bonkers.
Good morning, Bobson in Bulgaria.
Good morning of the hook overtime.
How you doing today?
Well, the heat is not too bad in that time of night, so it's bearable.
Well,
first of all, I wanted to express my condolences to Alex for the loss in his family.
Thank you. Really means a lot. Thank you.
Second, I wanted to congratulate the U.S. sports folk for getting one more gold medal than the Chinese folks.
Yeah, that was last minute.
At the Tokyo Olympics.
Uh-huh. So now they can legitimately be listed first.
Well, in more than one way can they be listed first.
Mm-hmm.
Or
total number of golds, total number of medals.
Yeah. And that's that Apple issue, there's two things that really bother me. Sometimes it would happen that I'd be walking down the street and there would be a need to summon a help, competent help in terms of, oh well, medical care for someone who's lost consciousness in some case on the street or what have you. You know, you're walking down the street and you need to use your communicator for a legitimate purpose.
Right.
and then you pull it out, and you find out that for the past 4 or 5 hours, Apple's database matching thingy has been draining your battery, and you cannot summon the help you need for the person who's in trouble. That's bothersome to me.
Okay, that's a legitimate. I didn't even think of that, but yeah, draining your battery, all that searching for all kinds of imagery that's objectionable.
And the other objectionable thing is that there are folks whose job entails maintaining and administering a database of images of child abuse, which makes me feel sorry about those folks, but it doesn't matter how good they are compensated for doing that. It doesn't seem like a dream job in any case.
No. There's a lot to be concerned here. Absolutely. Rob, go ahead.
There was a good article some time back, I think a year or two ago, about the mental toll that work takes on the people who work at Facebook and who are monitoring images for child abuse and reporting it when they find it. But they, I think, weren't even employed by Facebook themselves. They were an outside contractor. Also, not related to what Bob's was talking about, but I just wanted to correct myself. I said Rob Rosenberger was the name of a security reporter who was looking at the Lindell stuff. It was actually Robert Graham, a different Rob entirely. There are dozens of us. But yes, that's a very good point, Bobson, that, yeah, it's dirty work, and I don't think there's any amount that really can be worth it.
Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, building off that as well. When I had just graduated law school, I clerked for a federal judge at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. And so we were essentially like the Supreme Court of the military. Any appeals that happened from a court-martial would go to, like, let's say, the Army Court of Criminal Appeals, and then it would be appealed to us. And then after our court was the U.S. Supreme Court. So at the time, when I had graduated law school, there were a number of questions that were being raised about child abuse imagery, child sexual abuse imagery, and whether or not it was protected by the First Amendment to have a rendering of the image itself. And so because there was this precedent that renderings, I believe, were protected by the First Amendment, and actual images were not, we had a flurry of appeals that were brought to our court on the basis of, well, we don't know whether or not this is a rendered image or if it's a actual image. And because of that, I had to look at the evidence in the record and deciding these appeals and helping my judge determine, you know, what the right course of action was, what the right way to vote on the case was. And I had to look at child pornography, not all the time, but enough of it. And yeah, it was absolutely abhorrent and horrible. And also my wife is was a prosecutor, and she dealt with sex crimes and crimes against children. And you know, the stuff that she had to deal with on a nearly daily basis was absolutely horrible. And I have to say, you know, there really weren't a lot of resources to help people with that. You just take it home. You're just expected to, as a lawyer, disassociate yourself from your case, be impartial, unaffected, yet at the same time a zealous advocate and for whatever your case is. But yeah, those things, you know, it can make it tough to sleep at night.
Bobson, anything else?
Well, I think Gil mentioned earlier during the show that there's a mask mandate on the subway trains there. And I was wondering if there's any enforcement of that. Because when I traveled by subway here not too long ago, there were signs on the wall saying that there's going to be a €150 fine if two people not wearing masks. Is there some such enforcement over there in the subway, or is it just a mandate without any recourse against people who disappear?
thank you for asking, Bobson. The mandate is unenforced at best, I think. There is signage that says you need to be wearing a mask, including a helpful graphic of how to do it. And there are often announcements over the intercom system, the public address system, that say you need to be wearing a mask. But any good New Yorker knows that we don't pay attention to those announcements, so that doesn't help. And and that's the other thing, is I don't say anything to anyone because I don't want to get punched in the face. And my concern is if I say to someone, you need to be wearing a mask, they will punch me in the face. So no real enforcement.
Unless you punch them first. All right.
Let's keep our fists to ourselves right now. But Gila, you know, if as you say, there's one person per subway car, that's not a bad average, especially compared to the rest of the country. I think most New Yorkers are doing the right thing. And if you did get punched in the face, I think they would stand up for you.
I'd like to think so. But maybe I have a punchable face. I mean, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
They'd at least film
it. I seriously doubt it.
Thank you.
All right, Bobson, we're going to move on. But it's good hearing from you as always. And stay safe there in Bulgaria.
Thank you, folks. Have a wonderful evening.
All right. Get some rest.
Bye for now.
I think it's about 3 in the morning there, if I'm not mistaken. Our phone number is 802-321-4225, only on for a couple more minutes here on Off the Hook Overtime, talking about all sorts of technological and social issues this week. And again, we're not on next week, so this might be your last chance for a couple of weeks to talk to us. In fact, I guarantee it will be. Anyone have anything to say? Because I've run out of things to say.
Well, if you don't want to call us, you can email us at oth@2600.com. You can also reach us at Hacker Radio Show on Twitter. There are many avenues in which to get in touch with us. Hacker Radio Show at mastodon.social as well for those of you living the Mastodon life.
Okay.
And one interesting thing that I've noticed monitoring the social media for this program is that I've also monitored the hashtag Off the Hook, just in case something in there is for us, because sometimes there is. But by and large, the hashtag Off the Hook is used for characters from a game called Splatoon, which is a Nintendo game. And also, there are a lot of seafood restaurants called Off the Hook. And they post pictures of their food and their menus and things. And I think they owe us something.
Yeah, we got to send those cease and desist letters out. You know, we're way behind on those. So Off the Hook, that's us, okay? You can't have it.
Yes.
All right. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm healthy.
Good to hear. Something on your mind?
I chimed in a little bit late. What is the main discussion is about the mask.
Yeah, we covered a little bit of that, and then there was some talk about this new Apple software that kind of like protects kids by scanning for hashes on people's phones.
What do you guys personally think about going into another lockdown, because that's what they're talking about now?
Well, I'm not in favor of it. I would not be happy, but I would be upset that we were forced into that by irresponsibility, because that's the only reason we would be going into another lockdown, is because the virus hasn't been defeated.
Right, and it's because that the virus hasn't been contained due to the interaction and people, you know, going about their daily life like there's no problem. So wouldn't it be necessary for there to be restrictions in order to combat the virus?
Well, we kind of just talked about that. There was Gila was talking about the subways and how basically it's not like enforced or anything yet. But my opinion about that is, like, if people are out just reckless, inconsiderate of each other, then that's how you get people starting to, like, say, well, we got to have fines, or we got to, like, really come down hard on everybody. But if people are cool, they, like, respect wherever people are at and just keep your distance and stuff and keep things moving, then, like, that's not going to be as much of a priority. Like, oh, we got to get $1,500 if you see somebody, you know, that's how much your ticket's going to be or whatever. But that's me.
So as a globe, this is not specific to United States of America. As a globe, how would you, I mean, because we've never had anything like this in our lifetime, something to this capacity. So how would we permanently, what's the solution to stop this thing and go back to a normal life, virus-free, and continue for the future?
Well, I'm going to turn over to Rob, but I mean, personally, I would say working together, you know, agreeing on the science, agreeing on the best ways forward, and not constantly be debating these issues. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, you basically covered what I was going to say. Yeah, the way we get through this is the way that the people who have devoted their life to studying these very subjects, the doctors, the scientists, the way they have told us we need to beat this.
Maybe that will be the solution.
Yeah, I mean, the truth of the matter is that by all expert accounts, if when we first locked down, everyone did what they should have. Everyone got the vaccines as soon as they could. Everyone masked up all they had to. Like, if we had flattened the curve properly, as people were talking about, and if we had reached a state where we had herd immunity, we wouldn't have a Delta variant now. We could be more or less back to normal by now. And the reason we are not is because of every single person who didn't do what they were supposed to for all our sakes. And that's the way we beat this, is by everyone getting it through their damn head that we need to, that we're all responsible for each other, that we're in this together, that we're going to keep facing this together, and that we it's our own fault.
Yeah, I think like we got to focus like a laser on this particular virus and get it right. Because, I mean, it's coming back around, all that. Like, it's got to be, like, it's not going so well, but it's got to, this is the chance to kind of really double down on that, all that effort, everything everybody already knows, instead of saying the same thing. Just kind of focus like a laser on that. But also, as like a globe or a society or a nation, whatever, however big you want to look down at humanity, I would say prepare, like be better integrated in whatever way. I know it's a paradox right now because people are divided, but you have to find that unity and prepare for the next time humanity might get hit with something like this. That's me, though, just on the specific question.
So do you know the current statistics for the infection rates right now, like as we speak?
I don't myself. Does anybody?
I'll tell you. I mean, it's not like a trick question. I just wanted to know if y'all were keeping up with the numbers. Right now, as we speak, in our country, just in America, it's over 100,000 a day. New infections every single day, 100,000 average. So, something like this is pretty much back to 1 year ago. From, you know, it's the same thing that was going on last year around this time. Same numbers again. And we had a significant drop, and then ever since the mutation, right back up again. And now it's mutating again.
Yeah.
Where it's becoming resistant to the vaccine.
That is the scariest part, because, you know, we talk about the Delta variant. There's something called the Delta Plus variant. I'm hearing the Epsilon and the Gamma variants are in the future, and they may not respond to the vaccine. And if that happens, then we really are all the way back at square one, and maybe in a far worse state. Right now, at least, the people who have gotten the vaccine are somewhat protected. But if we reach a stage where it mutates into something that does not respond to the vaccine, I can't even imagine how bad that will be.
Yeah, so it would only make sense that to initiate another lockdown, because
in that situation,
that's
yes.
That's the only way to bring about, you know, a solution, because the way it is right now, even if you get, let's say 100% of the population gets vaccinated, that's not going to stop it. It's still going to keep going.
Well, if 100% of the population got vaccinated, it would stop pretty much, you know, 75% and above, you start reaching herd immunity.
And that might be enough to slow this thing down enough so that it doesn't mutate anymore, doesn't spread anymore. But we're playing with fire here by not reaching those numbers and by seeing what it does. You know, if we have only a small percentage, meaning below 75% of the population vaccinated, we're kind of like, you know, saying, okay, virus, your move. What do you got for us? And we're starting to find out. Go ahead, Gila.
I think there's also a lot to be said for the fact that if you have been vaccinated, even if you get the even if you get sick after you've been vaccinated, it's not as severe, generally speaking. And that also helps reduce the strain on the medical infrastructure we have in this country. Because if hospitals and doctor's offices keep getting flooded by people who are really severely ill, we have states running out of ICU beds again. Mm-hmm. If more people were vaccinated, people might still be getting sick, but not as sick.
Right.
Again, I think we need to really back away from the death rate as the only indicator of how bad this is. It's bad enough that people, let me try this again, people die. That's horrible. But people are also, it's not the only indicator of what this is. And I think we need to stick away from the binary of it kills you or it doesn't. Because there's a lot more going on than that.
I just wanted to add that specifically to lockdowns, I think that it's going to be a lot more organized and strategic because of the amount of knowledge and the amount of different strategies that were implemented in the last year. So it may not be as like comprehensive or like something they did in China where, you know, you couldn't come and go or anything like that. I think we have a really kind of fresh understanding of how to control the virus and I mean, it changes a little bit with this variant or, you know, transmissibility rates or whatever, but we still have these like physical tools and things to control it and stuff that we know worked in the past year, as I guess what I'm saying.
Caller, we're going to give you the last word tonight.
Well, I have to go, so I wanted to ask you one question real quick. What is the introduction theme that you play for Off the Wall? Like, what is the artist for that?
Did you send that to us? Did you email us with that question? Because someone forwarded that to me, and you emailed
That was me.
Okay,
because
we didn't know. I'm glad you called because we didn't know if we should answer that question on Off the Hook or Off the Wall. But since it's you that asked the question, we'll just answer you. It's Philip Glass. It's a piece called Religion.
So what was the name again?
Philip Glass.
Philip Glass?
Yes. Glass.
And then it's called Religion?
Yes, that's the name of the track that we use as the intro for this.
That's some great hacking music. Like,
it is.
Like, I love
it. It really is. We do a lot of hacking to that music. But thanks for asking, and thanks for calling, and talk to you again soon.
All right. Good night.
All right, take care. Alex, looks like you have something to say.
Yeah. Before we go and sign off, I want to tell a knock-knock joke.
I got a cab waiting downstairs. Come on.
Yeah, I bet. Okay. I'll ask it to Rob, I guess. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Philip Glass.
Philip Glass who?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Philip Glass.
Philip Glass who?
Oh, you see, he's making a joke about repetitiveness in music.
Yes,
and
it's all
like that. Very, very funny, Alex. Very funny.
So
yeah, yeah.
You're over and
you're
over
a real
and over
scream.
Again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the Philip Glass knock, knock joke.
Alex, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Alex.
Alex who?
I don't have a punchline yet, but this is your warning that I'm going to come up with one.
Wait, I've got it.
Oh, go ahead.
All right.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Who says who's
Orange.
There?
Orange. Orange. Don't you mean apple?
No, I mean orange.
Okay, orange. Okay, orange. Orange who?
Orange, you're glad I didn't say Philip Glass. That's how these all are.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I usually do that by saying apple several times. Then switching to orange.
We've been on the air too long.
I've always been with bananas, but you know.
Bananas. There you go.
Did we mention there's a heat wave everywhere?
Oh my God, it's so hot.
And everyone's brain is swelling.
And we can't keep the fan on because it makes too much noise. So, you know, in order to do radio to entertain people, we have to sacrifice a lot of sweat and comfort.
I don't have a knock-knock joke, but I do want to just encourage listeners, go to cdc.gov. There is a section there where you can look at the statistics going week by week, month by month, all the way back to the beginning of this thing, and you can look at the numbers, the hard data, the data that does not care what political side you're on, that does not care what you think Big Pharma is up to, the data that is just the basic fact of the numbers of people that are being affected by this, that are being killed by this. Look at those numbers and, you know, use that information to make your decisions. That's what hackers do. We get the information, and then we use it in a way that we feel is right.
And the other thing to consider, if you're thinking that this is a political issue and that somehow this is Democrats versus Republicans, please keep in mind there's a whole world out there, and it's affecting the entire world. Do you really think that Mongolia cares about Democrats and Republicans? No, they don't. They're going through the same thing we are, and the same science works over there as it does over here. So it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant what the Democrats and Republicans say or whatever fights they're having. This is simple. This is science. This is a virus. This is something that we can fight, but we have to all do it. And if we don't, then again, back to square one. So on that happy note, anything you want to say before we disappear for 2 weeks?
Well, please share anything that you have hacked.
Yes.
In the next 2 weeks. OTH at 2600.com. We want to know.
Or how about you hack something in the next 2 weeks and show it off to us. But don't cause any true mayhem.
Or if there's something hacking related that you think we've overlooked, please inform us. We will look into it. We will research it. We'll discuss it. We'll bring it to the attention of everyone listening out there and get to the bottom of whatever it is. We're always looking for ideas, so please write us, OTH at 2600.com.
I think that's a fine way to end up, but Alex has something else to add. Go ahead.
Yeah, just, you know, we started out, I think, rather somberly talking about somebody in my family that had just 2 days ago died from COVID-19. And I think, you know, we should end on a bit of a somber note too, which is, you know, do yourself a favor, do your family a favor. You know, you can prevent this from happening, and it does happen. We went a year and a half without having a casualty in our family, and 2 days ago we had one. We might have another one very soon. And it's all avoidable. It's all preventable. Do your duty to your fellow man. And help yourself and get vaccinated, please. Let's don't have a repeat of what happened to our family.
And as we said at the beginning of the show, when you hear nonsense, misinformation, falsities presented as science, speak out about it. Fight back. Let people know this is not acceptable. And don't be afraid to be nasty. Don't be afraid to be loud. Because people's lives are at risk here. And the evidence, we see it every day. So it's not just one side versus another. It's some really, really bad things that are happening if people let them happen. The answer is within our grasp, and we're so close. All right, hopefully in 2 weeks we'll have better news to share. And that's how quickly it can happen, too, because, you know, only a month ago, England was way behind us, vaccine-wise. Now they're way ahead of us. All right, so let's not let them stay ahead of us. We can get to 75% as well. All right. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Good night.